I hope you have rested well. So over the last couple of days and also in group interviews, we have touched on the five hindrances. So I would like to talk a bit more about that. The five hindrances are quite important because they don't just turn up in meditation. We have usually our kind of favorites. And they also turn up in our lives, you know. So it is really important if we want to be or act differently in our everyday lives, if we want to change and develop, it is quite an important task to see the hindrances and recognize them in meditation, and then later on to be able to actually see them acting out in our daily lives, in what we do, together with friends and families and the workplaces we are. So, actually very much in line with the talk yesterday, it is much easier to see them when we are on retreat, you know, when our mind starts to still and when we can start to see them more clearly. But what happens usually with the hindrances is that we kind of wake up in the middle of the hindrance being fully active, you know. It's not that we kind of usually see it kind of coming in, and then we maybe see it peak, and then we see it going away. You know, usually it's kind of a full-on attack, and we are in the midst of it. And then we kind of see it maybe, and then we kind of drop a bit off, and then we kind of, you know, wake up again and see it again. So this is really the most important task, is to kind of become very familiar, to familiarize with ourselves with the hindrances, how they play out for us personally. And that might be very different for every one of us. So the first task is to figure out which are my top ones. And there are usually two, maybe three. And then the next task is to see, you know, how do I sense them? What do they do to me? Yeah. And this is quite personal and can be different from person to person. And the next thing is to realize, and it's kind of in the group interviews, is to kind of see I'm not the only one, you know. It's to see that they really are very impersonal in the sense that we all experience hindrances. You know, it's not something, as I said yesterday, that I invited, that I want to be there. It's just something that is kind of starting to cloud my mind, to taint my mind, to color my mind. And then at some point it might drop off again. So I would like to again, you know, remind you of what I said yesterday, and I think many people, particularly from the mindfulness world, you're very familiar with the formula of RAIN. You know, it's the recognize it, accept it, investigate it, and then non-identification, although I think the N has been changed to something differently. This is the very original version of the N, which I still like as a Buddhist, they're not taking it too personal. The most difficult task is the recognizing. And for me, it's kind of when you... The recognizing, for me, again, happens on three levels that you can feel them. You can feel them in your body, you can feel them mentally, it can be emotionally. So you have to really find your own version of that and see where is it the easiest for you to kind of recognize what is happening. You know, this is your personal bit of it. This is your personal investigation. Once we see it, you know, it's... Once we recognize what is happening, you know, sometimes when we are very familiar with it, that might be enough. Or if it's not a full-blown, you know, if there's not the big aversion, just a bit of irritation, you know, just recognizing sometimes just makes it go away, you know, or decrease in strength, you know. It might just really topple away by actually just recognizing and naming the hindrance. Naming might be... important in the beginning, and it might not be necessary later on once you have familiarized yourself with them. You know, if you experience some restlessness, it might be really just naming restlessness, you know, can actually settle something in your body and in your mind. So again, this is the most important step. Once we recognize it, it is really important to a certain degree. You know, it's acceptance, but it really is an embracing. And there's a lot of wisdom in the embracing, to really kind of learn to be with that and not to have this kind of tolerating. You know, I tolerate it's there. Something which is also important, the distance I have to the hindrance, you know. I mean, maybe there's a bit of aversion, you know, where do I place it? And again, that might also be different at different times. You know, maybe I can just see the edge of it and that's fine for one sit, you know, and in a different sit, you know, I have to actually really take a very much closer look and put it into my lap, so to speak, you know, and really have a close look at what is actually going on. So this is, again, it's kind of a playfulness with it. It is really different from sit to sit, from person to person, where you place your hindrance and how you work with it. The next step, the investigation, I would suggest, or this is what I do, is to investigate it on three levels. How does it feel in the body? What emotions are present? Which thoughts are coming up? Now we'll go to talk a bit more about each of the hindrances a bit later on, you know, but some are quite physical and some are a lot mentally. So if you have a hindrance that's quite mental, it might be really good to go down to your body, you know, to, in a sense, move as far away as you can, so you kind of are able to settle again. If it is quite physical, you can stay with the physical thing, you know, and then maybe just recognizing, you know, what is going on might actually do it. On the other hand, you might maybe take a little walk up to your thoughts, you know, and maybe just a little bit, maybe like the Grand Canyon, you know, you go towards the edge, but you don't want to jump in, yeah? You just want to go to the edge and kind of see, you know, what's the mind telling me, yeah? What kind of stories is it telling me? What's it making up? And what kind of thoughts, desires, wishes, plans? Yeah, plans is a lot that comes up for you. You know, what kind of thoughts are actually coming up? You know, and then you want to step back from the ridge. You know, you don't want to topple in there. And of course, in the practice of it, you know, this will happen. Yeah, sometimes you jump right into it and then maybe half an hour later when you hear the bell, you know, you kind of realize, okay, I'm still stuck with it. But this is the part of the learning. This is the part of the recognizing it and feeling it and sensing it, whatever it does. Some hindrances have an emotional part that might be very clear with anger and maybe desire. It might not be so clear with other hindrances like doubt, or like sloth and torpor or drowsiness and sleepiness. They might be covering over an emotion, and it might be quite important to look and feel into, you know, if there's something that you're not recognizing, something you're not accepting, something you're missing out or pushing towards the side. So I think for investigation, I do it on the three levels. I do it on the physical level, in the body. How do I feel it? How do I sense it? On the emotional level, is there anything present? Anything I'm pushing to the side, and in my thoughts, but not jumping into the thoughts, just getting maybe a sense of the voice or the sound, you know, or the energy of the thoughts, you know, so more the quality of the thought than necessarily the content. And that is quite a challenge and needs some practice, and it needs some stability of mindfulness. So going to the hindrances a bit in detail. There are different similes, and I have for each of the hindrances, and I like a particular set. So for sense desire, kamachanda, the Buddha suggests, you know, that it can feel like an indebtedness. You know, you feel like, you know usually, particularly when you've been practicing for a long time and you have taken too much, you know, or you have done something, you know, which probably was taking to a certain degree something away from somebody else. you're quite aware of that, and usually that can in itself create a lot of unease and restlessness. So this kind of sense of living or being with a debt is the picture for this particular hindrance. So how to deal with sense desire? I mean, if you're on retreat again, the first thing is always recognizing. Sometimes that really is enough and it drops away. But if it's a full-blown attack, you know, we can maybe play a bit. And usually sense desire, it will come, I would think, from a thought, you know, often some sight, sound, smell, touch that we come in contact with. So it's really to kind of looking at our sense doors. Like I also said yesterday, how are we looking into the world? You know, what are we looking for? You know, I'm looking for the smell in the flower. And if it's not there, you know, I'm disappointed. You know, something happens there. But there's something, you know, that is going out. Something that, and this is also the energy. It's something that kind of pulls you forward. Yeah, pulls you away from your settling into your meditation. So then there's the other, or the next hindrance, which is ill will or vyapada. That is everything from small irritation to full-blown anger. Yeah, the full-blown anger will be not go past your radar, I would assume, you know, but a little bit of irritation might actually be quite difficult to recognize in your meditation. Yeah, just maybe the sound of the air condition, somebody coughing, yeah, or talk that's too long, a talk that's too short, not enough information, you know, all of this. And I mean, this is one of the hindrances, you know, which was very much on top of my list, you know, my two top favorites, that is restlessness and anxiety, and then it was the vyapada part, you know. And the picture for this is that having to deal with this is like a disease. And I think it's quite suiting because people that are quite angry and experience a lot of anger actually do have a lot of symptoms. You know, usually they have high blood pressure or some, you know, some heart disease. So I think, you know, this kind of, you know, that it's like a disease, you know, which we kind of have to mold and become aware of, you know, is a very good picture for me. It's the kind of nothing is ever good enough, you know, wanting to improve all the time. How to work with that? Again, if we have recognized what is happening and it's still kind of sitting there, if I realize that this is something which is coming up quite often for me, then metta practice is a really good antidote. It's not necessarily the best when you're feeling it, when it's full blown, when you're sitting in the middle of it. You don't want to put a bit of sugar topping onto the nice, you know, irritation or anger you're sitting with. You actually want to do something else at that time. But as an antidote, you know, just to train your heart to be more kind and open-minded, and you know, metta is a really good practice if you're dealing with this an awful lot. When you find yourself, you know, in anger, and this might be anger that is just not directed towards anything, which can be really, really difficult, or anger towards a person or some people, you know, compassion might actually be a really, really good practice, you know, to kind of see your own struggle if it's not directed at a person, to see, you know, what is happening, you know, and to be compassionate about the distress you're actually experiencing. So not necessarily metta, but really the understanding, okay, here is some suffering that is happening and ongoing. And also if it's directed towards other people, you know, you also want to maybe look at them in a different way. If you feel irritated about something, to see their suffering, to see their humanity, to see, you know, that they're also struggling and wanting the best in life, which maybe might impact on you in a way that isn't really acceptable to you, but still you can actually sense and maybe see, okay, actually what I want is really to be happy like each one of us. And these two hindrances, they will both, so sense desire and ill will both, they can be on all three levels. Of course, they can be emotional, but you can feel them very much in your body, you know, kind of a contraction with the ill will, or a kind of a moving almost forward with the sense desire. And there might be lots of thoughts and stories, of course, that will support this hindrance. The next hindrance, sloth and torpor, sutina middha. And they don't necessarily have a thought. You know, they just close you down. You know, it's this kind of drowsiness, sleepiness, numbness. Yeah. You don't feel really anything. Nothing is really happening. This is a bit boring, you know. And you kind of, you know, your whole energy kind of contracts. And you feel stuck, and you can, in a sense, you can feel it, and you feel contracted, you feel stuck, and you can't really get out of that, yeah. And this is also the simile for this hindrance is the it's like a prison, yeah? And I think for me personally, you know, I at some point it was a lovely summer day, even more beautiful than it is today here, and I could see the day, but I couldn't reach it. You know, there was something, it was a shield or something. You know, I could not kind of get a feel of this beautiful day. I was aware of it, I knew it, but I just couldn't reach it, yeah? So this would be kind of the sloth and torpor or drowsiness, numbness, hindrance. And again, it might have some thoughts for you, but usually it doesn't have so many thoughts. It's something that closes you down. So how to deal with that is kind of, you have to play with that, but if it's really impacting you a lot, you know, you want to maybe stand up in the meditation hall. You know, that is absolutely fine to do. If you deal with that, you want to get some energy going, and shifting posture is a very good way of changing the energy in your body. You also want to maybe open your eyes, see if that makes a difference to you. Also you can work with some imagination if that is working very well for you. You know, you can imagine some light coming in, or imagine some cold water, you know, over your body. You know, so you can play with all these antidotes and see what is best working for you. And then we have restlessness and anxiety, udacha and kukucha. I think most of us, you know, have at least a certain degree of this hindrance, because our society is such highly strung. You know, we kind of, you know, this is almost, I think, part of our society, part of our way of being. And the picture for this, which I particularly like, it's like being a slave. I think that's what it feels to us mostly when we're really very busy and stressed, and our minds really kind of going on a very high level. You know, it's really like we'd like some peace, we'd like some calm, but you know, it's just kind of running around with us really. So this is kind of the, it can be mentally, you know, it can be thoughts, past, future, going round and round. It can be very physical. You can actually, it can be so physical that you almost feel you can't sit and have to stand up. But if you recognize it as a hindrance, the best thing really is to stay calm in your body. Calming the body will calm your mind and will at least ease the hindrance. I remember one time because restlessness was also one of my top hindrances. I was at home and I was meditating, and then I find myself standing in the kitchen making my cup of tea while I could hear the chime in the room, in the meditation room. So, you know, I had been standing up, walking, completely unaware that I actually left my meditation behind somehow, you know, and I kind of somehow unconsciously, I don't know, made it to the kitchen. So this is what restlessness can do to you. I said anxiety, usually historically it's more remorse. So things we have done before and that are still kind of lingering with us, you know. So ethics also have a certain degree of calming this hindrance. The last one, skeptical doubt. It's not doubt, it's not asking questions, it is really, and it's called vichikicca. This is skeptical doubt. You know, this practice isn't right for me, this teacher isn't right for me, I can't get it right. You know, it's really something which stops you from practicing. Yeah, you move from one tradition to the next, you move from one teacher to the next, and the similar for that is like being in a desert, because nothing really can grow. Yeah, everything starts to, in a sense, die away before it comes to fruition. And it's also said that this is one of the most difficult hindrances, because it really stops you before you actually get into anything. And here, if you recognize that this might be you, and you might recognize it particularly more in your life than before coming on retreat, you know, you start things, you stop things, yeah, because always there's some doubt, some question, something that could be better, something you're not sure about. So then really it's kind of to understand that there's an investigation that has to happen. Yeah, getting some literature, getting your faith established in the practice that you're deciding on to do. For all these hindrances, the Buddha suggests to have spiritual friends. Yeah, which is a really great thing. And again, the group interviews in that sense are also very important, so we can share about what we're experiencing. Maybe also our own antidotes, you know, what works for you, and recognizing how it feels for you. And sometimes listening to someone, then you start to recognize, oh, I also have experienced something like that. So spiritual friendship is a great supporting environment. Here and maybe hopefully for you also outside. So, right? So now, following up from yesterday, I would like to guide a little meditation on sound. And we have the air condition here, so we don't have so many sounds of the birds. So all coughing, sneezing, moving, adjusting is perfect. It doesn't mean that we want, a whole session of that, you know, but please, I mean, you know, this is a really good thing if you don't have so many other sounds. For some people, sound works really well. For some people, it is really difficult. And the one thing I would like to point out, because we have a bit of discussion with that with Akinchana, you know, it's kind of a listening meditation does two things, you know. It helps you to create a spaciousness, yeah, and you can maybe clearly and easily see the arising and passing away, yeah, more easily than with other things. However, it is quite a passive practice, yeah. So it needs the other part of, you know, staying with the breath or with a body sensation or some other object that is actually placed in your body. Yeah, you need to practice the meditation that stays and is active and actively stays with an object. And you also need to train over time the spaciousness where you can hold a space to see the arising and passing away of phenomena. Both are important, yeah? If you only do one, you might want to start practicing a bit of the other. Okay. So please find a comfortable position. And we'll start with the body, you know. We try to really get a sense of the body touching the ground, feet on the ground. Sensing the support of the cushion or of the chair. And maybe you can hold a sense of the body sitting on this cushion, on this chair, in this room. And when you find that sounds become difficult, come back to the body. And during sound meditation, do not lose your body. So the body should always stay in your awareness, maybe a bit more in the background, but it's still here. You're still present, physically present in your body. And for a beginning, try to place your attention in one place in your body, maybe your hands or your feet or the breath, whatever helps you to stabilize your attention. Part of your body that is comfortable, that you can find ease, stability. And once you feel that you have found some calm, have some mindfulness, you would like to open up your attention just a bit more into the room. There's the humming of the air condition. There are some people moving, maybe some coughing, some sneezing. Certainly my voice that is getting to your ears. That might be pleasant or unpleasant, so just notice that. And at any time you find you're drifting off or it becomes too difficult or you're not getting much mindfulness going, then just come back to your anchor in the body. But for now, just open a little bit your awareness, attention, into the room. And allow the noises, the sounds to come to you. Not holding on to them, not grasping them, not identifying them. Just noticing. Just seeing the arising and the passing away. If you become confused, if you're drifting off, just come back to your body. Establish some mindfulness, and then maybe try and open up again. Allowing the sounds to come to you without recognizing, naming, holding on to, grasping, just allowing to see the arising and passing away. The silence before the sound is a quiet envelope between the now and the after, your last moment of unknowing before the sowing of whatever, whoever, wherever comes next.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.